It's showtime.
Bob Kincaid, 3 hours of conversation cussing and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. And here we go, off and running on this 19th day of September 2023. This is The Horn. HeadOn.live is where you'll find us on the interweb, too. That's where you go if you'd like to be part of the Merry Wacky Zany Real-Time Madcap Multimedia Extravaganza. That is The Horn chat room in the 3 hours in which this program is live, Monday through Friday, 5 to 8 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time, 2 to 5 p.m. Pacific Daylight Time, all time zones in between and the Great Globe Round. And whatever time it is when you're listening to the podcast. If you're listening live, though, and you pop into the chat room right here this very instant, you'll be greeted by the early arrivers, Theo and Squeaky and Too Much Hutch, as well as Anatole. Anatole just now popping in. And capably moderated by Horn Chief Agronomist, Chief Mathematician, and Bud Trimmer Emeritus, Roger, in Oregon. Hi, I'm Robin. It is Titanic Tuesday on the Horn, and, oh, well, you recall the meaning of Titanic Tuesday, or the origins of it, you know, when many, many years ago now, in a land that time forgot, there was a morning monotone who no longer exists upon the planet. And great was his loss, who had mickle powers of monotony. That's what it means to speak with a monotone. And someone called him one day over in America's fifth smallest radio market, Beckley, West Virginia, and said, "Steve, how come you reckon it is that there are seashells in the rocks in West Virginia? I done seen them when I was in the coal mines, and we ain't nowhere near the beach." To which he proudly replied,
"Well, caller, that's because of the movement of the Titanic plates."
And I've got way too much emotion in that. But that's how it was. And, the motion of the Titanic plates just had a lot of staying power, and thus was Titanic Tuesday born at the Horn. No word as yet on the whereabouts of the Titanic cauliflower ricer. All the things down there. Never mind. But that's where it comes from. And we've got so... Oh, God. Yeah, yesterday was just plumb vacuous, and I know it. And I didn't feel real great about it, because there was serious stuff we could have talked about, and I apologize for not. But the program sort of got taken over by Clanny Oakley. It's kind of like when you go to a brew pub, and there's a brewery that'll come in, and they'll do a tap takeover, and like all the taps are all their different brews and everything. Those are fun. A Clanny Oakley talk takeover, not so much. But I don't want to get ahead of myself, because every program here at the Horn begins with gratitude, and this program is no different, so we say thank you to our PayPal subscribers for the 19th day of the month. And that means that we say thank you to Don in BC, and thank you to Darlene in Connecticut. Thank you both for being partial sponsors of the program and holding down the fort on the 19th. It is, well, I appreciate it more than you can ever know. And that means, and by the way, thank you to Brandon and Fennell for jumping in via the U.S. Postal Service. Remember, moving forward, and this just has to do with some housekeeping changes. Moving forward, if you want to donate by mail, contribute to the program by mail, we're going to change how you make out checks and money orders. Just make them to Robin Kincaid, RobynKincaid, and that'll make, because I'm having to move away from the credit union account and go to a different bank, and because of structural changes that Bossman Wayne wanted me to make, so that there won't be any hiccups when he's gone. The address remains the same, 10138 North Eisenhower Drive, PMB 318, Beckley, Beckley, WV 25801. It just makes checks and money orders to Robin Kincaid. And that'll make things ever so much simpler. But that having been said, our fundraising goal is at 1675. $1,675 to go to catch up here at pretty much the two-thirds of the month mark. So that means today's unfunded, yesterday's unfunded, Thursday's unfunded, Wednesday's unfunded, Tuesday is unfunded, and there remains $175 of last Monday to get caught up. And we've been running behind. We've finished every month since April with a deep deficit, and it has been, it's made life difficult. But I hope I hope that we can take a bite out of some of this evening. And, every month we sweat the bills. And so I'm sweating them now. That said, we'll see how it plays out as we go along. I said that we were vacuous yesterday. And I don't see any other word. I mean, we talked about some serious stuff. We've got serious things to go into today. President Biden gave a fine address at the UN General Assembly today, and he laid out the case for not hanging Ukraine out to dry. The multimillionaire for-profit media coverage of that speech, however, left something to be desired. I'm so sick of all of this talk about Biden's age. I mean, honest to God, if you didn't say a word about Nitwit Nero's age when Julius Caesar couldn't walk down a ramp without having to play grab the general, then you can, shut the fuck up right off to Mars about Biden's age. I mean, is anyone even remotely interested in wondering what it would be like if Geezer Disgustus got on a bicycle or tried to eat an ice cream cone? These are all things that are probably beyond him. It was just frustrating, yeah. We had an ugly little display of both-siderism in regard to President Biden's speech. many Republicans are growing. You know, I was watching MSNBC. This is not what I tune in for. I mean, I don't want wall-to-wall cheerleading, but, you know, honesty, please, a little bit. And this wasn't journalism. Some pixel-stained wretch had the temerity to sit there and say, well, you know, a lot of Republicans are getting tired of funding the war in Ukraine. And some Democrats, too. Oh, shut up. Because, see, if it was 170 Republicans and there had gone from one to two Democrats who were not in favor of funding the war in Ukraine, that bullshit both-siderism is nominally factual or accurate. But the difference between 170 and two is profound, mathematically profound, and intellectually dishonest to equate the two. I keep up with this stuff, and I'm not seeing a bunch of people out there running, a bunch of Democrats running their mouths about, oh, let's hang Volodymyr Zelensky and the entire Ukrainian people out to dry. Now, you don't have to look very far within the MAGAT caucus to get that. But again, that's the MAGAT caucus. They're pro-Russia. They've been pro-Russia since people like Moscow Mitch went over to Mother Russia for the 4th of July. Try not to throw another F-bomb in there. The 4th of July. Still not okay with it. What was it, 2019? Were there six or were there eight Republicans who decided to celebrate America's independence in the heart of the kingdom of the empire of Rus and Mother Muscovy? Oh, by the way, if you're listening to the podcast, please like and subscribe. I can't emphasize that enough. It's real easy. Just press the like button, hit the comment button and say, love it! Or something like that. And the algorithms will know, and they'll maybe show us to other people who might perhaps like to join in the conversation. As to Vacuous, Matt in San Francisco says, America is hard work. It can wear down your soul. A little vacuity every now and then is required in order to stay in the fight. Yeah, every once in a while, you just have to look at the Lauren Boberts and say, oh, honey, no. Or, oh, honey, yes. Or, oh, honey. Uh-oh, I can feel myself getting sucked back in. Okay, I'm going to tell you this. And I'm going to be, I'm going to try to be done with bobblehead. So I'm scanning the news of West Virginia earlier today. And I know this place. There's a little place called Ravenswood. Sounds kind of goth, doesn't it? Ravenswood. It sits right there on the banks of West Virginia's Our Ohio River. It's ours, y'all. Don't make any mistakes. It's ours. It's not half ours and half Ohio. It's ours. But that being the case, Ravenswood sits in, and way, way, way back in the day, they fielded some mean peewee football teams. I'm just there. Those were some mean little kids. They had an aluminum plant there at one point in time, Ravenswood Aluminum. The plant is still there. There was a horrid labor action there, a lockout, a corporate lockout of the workers in an attempt to break the union. And, what was his name? Mark Rich. Remember Mark Rich?
God, we're back in the 90s now. Yeah, he was back when he fled to Switzerland to evade American justice because he was an asshole. And Mark Rich was one of the owners of Ravenswood Aluminum. It was ugly. But Ravenswood, man, it's a long time ago now, and Ravenswood's a different place, but not that different. Because I found out today that, you know, every small town in West Virginia needs to have some kind of festival or fair, or, I mean, like I said, it was just maybe this past weekend or the weekend before that, Mothman Festival wrapped up in Point Pleasant. I told our pal Joy in Ann Arbor that I thought of her. I need to get down there for that. It's fun. Lots of cryptidophiles. I don't even know if that's a word. But every little community needs a festival. Spencer, West Virginia, which once had the longest continuous brick building in the United States. It was the Spencer State Hospital. It got closed down. It was said to be quite haunted. You can imagine why. Well, there's a lot of black walnut trees in Roane County, West Virginia, and so consequently Spencer has the Black Walnut Festival, which we shorten to the Nut Festival. You can see why. Never mind. Well, they've got the Nut Festival. Here in Fayette County, of course, we have the state's largest single-day festival event, Bridge Day, that usually sees a couple of 100,000 people wandering around on the New River Gorge Bridge, watching people jump off with parachutes into the gorge below, some 900 feet or so. Lots of fun, chili cook-offs. No, it really is. It's a blast. The Oak Hill, West Virginia, has the Oak Leaf Festival. We will have festivals for just about anything. And so Ravenswood has entered the fray with a homemade jerky making contest. A lot of people make homemade jerky around here. They make it out of deer, they make it out of beef. Never seen any pork jerky. I think they even can do it out of chicken. Whatever. And the, you know, there's no news in that, but well, it's how they chose to name it, y'all. It is a festival of homemade jerky with a contest involved to see whose is the best and crown a winner every year. And thus did they decide to call it, really, the Ravenswood Jerk-Off. Not kidding. And you get your registration form at City Hall. So, perfectly good, God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing, Christ-centered, evangelical, fundamentalist, amosexual, Christian, Republican jerky makers are going to be walking into Ravenswood City Hall and saying, hey, where do I go to get my registration form for the jerk-off? And I saw the news, and it was almost as though I were slain in the spirit. No, that's tomorrow, prayer meeting Wednesday. But it was almost as though I were slain in the spirit. And before I could even stop myself, my thumbs had typed the words, just don't be surprised if Lauren Boebert shows up. Couldn't help myself. I couldn't. It was too much. So, it kind of brainwormed me. I'll eventually be okay. Odd, says Emilio. In Florida, we often have a festival of nuts. And I'll add editorially, that's just Florida, man. Mullets and robbing liquor stores with alligators under your arm. Never mind. But yes. So I got one last good Lauren Boebert joke in. But actually there is another great Lauren Boebert joke, and this one just has Titanic Tuesday written all over it, because it partakes of more than just its basic subject matter. Darlene sent this along. I'd seen it earlier as well. It was at the top of the stack anyway. Politico, Fetterman blasts Boebert. Darlene says, just one more dalliance in the gutter, okay? What he said is hilarious. I hope you read the quote in full. And yeah, I'm sick of hearing about Biden's age, too. It's all trumped-up BS. Kind of reminds me of that whole red wave BS the corporate media put us through for the midterms. Here's what she's talking about. So, John Fetterman, whom I like and respect, and probably shares more of my values than any other single member of the Senate of the United States, you got to give mad props to a guy who, when he was Lieutenant Governor of the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania, and thereby President of the Pennsylvania State Senate, hung a pride flag in that chamber, and just drove the maggots in there, shrieking up a tree. Is John Fetterman a sissy? Well, John Fetterman has been very open, and I have tremendous respect for this, too. He's been very open about his struggles with clinical depression. He had a stroke, worked through that. And despite the fact that the maggots continue to insist upon smearing him, he DGAF. And so now, look, I know a little bit about having a hard time shopping for clothing. Even in the before time, I was very tall. Not Fetterman tall, but tall. And finding, finding decent suits in 48 long was not easy. Especially not if you wanted them to be something other than Undertaker black. It's even more of a challenge now that I'm an SLW. But it's even more so for John Fetterman, because there's just not a lot of shit off the rack out there made for guys who are 6 feet, 9 inches tall. And the Shaquille O'Neal thrift store sells out pretty quick. So, backstory. Chuck Schumer, Senate Majority Leader, basically relaxed the rules of the dress code. Schumer relaxed the dress code for the Senate, and oh my sweet bleeding Jesus, you would have thought that that Chuck Schumer had actually just, put a pillow over Mitch McConnell's face and smothered him in his sleep. The those precious dainty souls in the world's greatest deliberative body are positively beside themselves. Chuck Grassley, who once ate Sister Carol Baker's dinner at Girls State in D.C., literally reached over and ate dinner off of her plate. I'll never forget her telling that story. I love Sister Carol. I need to get her back on the program sometime soon. Chuck Grassley said, well, I'm not going to do anything different. I'm just going to keep dressing like the Senate's been dressing for 240 years. I think maybe Chuck is so far gone that he thinks he was there for all of them. But okay, Chuckles, you do you. I want to see you show up in some velvet knee breeches with some pretty white stockings and some platform shoes with silver buckles on them and some lace cuffs and a dainty silk cravat and a lace collar. Do that, Chuckles, please. And then if that wasn't bad enough, noted Republican moderate Susan Collins of Maine said she would wear, and I'm taking this more as a threat than anything else, Susan Collins said she would wear a bikini to the floor of the House. You would think Chuck Schumer had declared clothing optional in the Senate. Oh, the conniptions. And as Angelo in the People's Republic of the Bronx says, Fetterman's dress code, when the thugs tell Jim Jordan to put on a jacket and tie, I'll be the first to contribute to the Fetterman dress code fund. You're making me feel risque, Theo. Boobert and jerk-offs. Now, Miss Robin, really? That's just too crass, he said, trying to stop laughing long enough to type legibly. So Chuck Grassley's going to be there in silver buckled shoes, and it's going to be adorable. Susan Collins is going to show up in a bikini. Please, Jesus, if you're up there. Hi, God. It's me, Roxanne. Please send Miss Lindsay to the floor of the House and, or to the floor of the Senate in Scarlet's ball gown for the barbecue at 12 Oaks. Please, please. And Tim Scott is Mammy. Oh! I'm sorry. I apologize. I think I was briefly possessed. But silliness deserves a silly response. John Fetterman has in the past run an outlet in Pennsylvania that provides clothing to people who are clothing insecure. And it's kind of ridiculous to ask him, I can't imagine that inflation hasn't hit the bespoke suit market, too. And John Fetterman's not a millionaire like, say, Joe to the Mansion Born. You knew there was going to be a mention of Joe to the Mansion Born, didn't you? Because Joe is just so disturbed
Yes.
But like I said, I can't imagine that inflation hasn't hit the bespoke bespoke suit market. I mean, do we want... you know what? Maybe Joe could take John's measurements with him the next time he flies over to London to get a few suits made on Savile Row. Susan Collins can take Lindsay's measurements when she goes to Dior. But I have no idea how much a bespoke suit for a man 6'9" tall, with shoulders the breadth of Pennsylvania, would cost. But it ain't gonna be like at the Men's Warehouse, okay? I always thought that was so clever. The Men's Wear, W-E-A-R, house. Oh, the marketing. Yeah, they're upset. They're upset at Senator John Fetterman. He's destroying the decorum and the collegiality of the Senate. Oh, no. The flag is a-falling. Manchin speaking to one Ursula Pirano, a reporter at Politico, on the Congress. Went over to Schitter and shitted earlier. Manchin tells me he spoke to Fetterman today about the Senate dress code change. I said, John, I think it's wrong, and there's no way I can comply with that. Wanted to tell him directly that I totally oppose it, and I will do everything I can to try to hold the decorum of the Senate. He's not being undecorous, Joe. You silly sod. He is merely trying to wear clothing that fits him. Maybe he could put on a necktie with his hoodie. Would that make you happy, Joe? Joe, with your dedication to decorum in the Senate? Joe, who allowed millions of children to go back into poverty and hunger when they had been lifted out of it? Joe? Oh. Reminds me of something Yeshua, the brown-skinned Palestinian day laborer and semi-literate rabbi, one time said, who wore a dress every day of their life. And don't tell Joe about that either, but so does the Pope. He said they're like whited sepulchers. They're all clean and bright and sparkling and white on the outside, but inside they are filled with corruption and death. The decorum of the Senate. You know what Joe Manchin never did? Joe Manchin never said a damned word when Curtsy and Kirsten Sinema showed up in the well of the Senate, dressed like she was off to a Britney Spears 80s party. 90s. In her little naughty Catholic schoolgirl outfit. And curtsied when she gave the thumbs down to a decent wage for every American. Nope, never said a damned word about Curtsy and Kirsten's little miniskirt. You know, I wouldn't listen. Make West Virginia great big old Governor Jim Justice hadn't got enough brains to blow his nose if it was dynamite. I blew that. Yeah. If his brains were dynamite, he wouldn't have enough to blow his nose. But the fact is, Joe is apparently scared to death he's going to get his ass handed to him by Make West Virginia great big old Governor Jim Justice come November of 2024. So now Joe's thinking he wants to go and be president of my beloved university, which is presently being parted out. But Joe's worried about decorum. Yeah. Well, I say all of this because upon hearing of this, John Fetterman, who has been showing more and more that he is fresh out of fucks to give, upon hearing, last week, what was the news where he said, the House Republicans say they're going to impeach Joe Biden, and he turned and he clapped his hands to both sides of his face as like Kevin in Home Alone said, "No, say it ain't so," and then started laughing wildly and said, "No, really, y'all go ahead, do it. I fucking dare you." Well, this time in regard, and remember. Republicans have mocked him. Maggots have mocked him for his struggles after his stroke. I mean, it's not exactly like they've been classy. And with all this Sturm und Drang about decorum and the dress code, well, John Fetterman said, "Well, I figure if I take up vaping and grabbing the hog during a live musical, they'll make me a folk hero." Because over at Fox News TV Radio Rwanda, and some pixel-stained wretch said, Senator Fetterman, what do you think about the story at Fox saying that you're the cause of the change of the dress code in the Senate to more casual outfits?" And that's when he said, "Well, I figure if I take up vaping and grabbing the hog during a live musical, they'll make me a folk hero." Whew. God, he's good. But, oh, by the way, Marginal Trailer Queen, she's having a conniption too, because, wow, they've got such decorum over in the House, but with her showing revenge porn in a committee meeting. "The Senate no longer enforcing a dress code for senators to appease Fetterman is disgraceful. Dress code is one of society's standards that set etiquette and respect for our institutions. Stop lowering the bar." Baby, you buried the bar 6 feet under the ground, you trailer trash twit. Jesus. Oh, by the way, Steve in New York with a reminder, because history is a thing. Senator Fetterman, tan suit. My God, that Barack Obama, you know, he's a Muslim. He wore a tan suit. He ain't got no respect for the office of the president. Yeah. Republican hypocrisy. Angelo in the People's Republic of the Bronx says, "So between MTG's sex guru and Boebert's undercover version of Willie and the hand jive, you'd probably think that their congressional office numbers would be found on a bathroom wall, starting with the phrase, 'For a good time.'" For a good time, for a good time, call 867-5309. Dating myself. Sorry. "No shirt, no service," Matt in San Francisco says. "The senators are a little out of touch with the average American worker. The days of suits and ties are long gone. How many shuttered dry cleaning businesses are around you?" I can think of about 10 right off the top of my head. Businesses aren't requiring it much anymore, and most people don't have the disposable income available to drop a bunch of coin on fancy clothes. I think they just want to make it easier to spot the plebes. After all, who knows when they'll break in again. Not wrong. Oh, yeah, and I remember, I mean, there was a time. I would get my dress shirts starched, extra starch, and pressed and folded. I wore French cuffs. Have my suits dry cleaned. Kept a clean suit in the office and a box of dress shirts and several ties in case you have to change. Does anybody do that anymore? I learned some of that when I was actually, you know, just a young journalist. You know, kind of modeling off of the hot shots who were on camera. And sit on the tails of your suit coat so that you don't rumple in the front. Yeah. Decorum and Ms. Sporkfoot, Bernadette says if decorum was a thing in the house, she'd be forced to cover those feet. Woo! And as for Chuckles Grassley, Bernadette said, "You forgot to tell Chuckles to choke on that damn white powdered wig and tell Collins's Jurassic ass not to threaten the country with a terrorist incident." Ugh, I know. Clarence with a note, Bikini Collins. Why does that sound like a tropical version of a Tom Collins? Bikini Collins. Clarence says, "Robin, I need a cosigner for a pallet of bleach. My eyes are burning from that image." Well, she's a Republican, so let's make it worse. It would probably be a Confederate flag bikini, and don't you dare tell me those don't exist, because I know where to go, just across the river in Oak Hill, where they have the Oak Leaf Festival, and buy one. Not that I have or ever would, but I've seen them for sale. 867-5309, David in South Carolina Stan says, "And a song for Jenny Thomas as soundtrack to this circus." She's still in the running. As far as I'm concerned, she's still in the running as co-conspirator number 6. Please. Mama needs a new pair of Jimmy Choos. Let it be true. Let my $5 bet in Reno, at Harris in Reno, pay off to the tune of a couple of grand. Might even be able to get a matching purse. So yeah, a little more vacuity to something more serious. A TV viewing tip via our pal Cynthia in the Bay Area. "Hey, Robin." "Hey, Cynthia." "I watched Sean Penn's Superpower last night on Paramount Plus, and I thought it was a motherfucking goddamn great piece of work. Zelensky comes off as a true hero, and I would happily trade every fucking goddamn Putin-loving Republican out there for one Zelensky. Oh, and by the way, twice now I have caught and removed a large praying mantis on my hummingbird feeder. The thing was big enough to take a hummingbird. Not in my yard." Okay, I'm not going to kill the praying mantises. They're good to have in the environment. They aren't going to be taking a hummingbird on my watch. I have it trapped inside a can with a lid at the moment, and I will relocate the thing far away after lunch. Very humane of you, Cynthia. And I didn't realize it until fairly recently. There are two species of praying mantis in this country. One is indigenous to the Western Hemisphere, and the other is a Chinese import, and the great big ones are the Asian praying mantises. And they'll even eat the native praying mantises. So, yeah, we don't want them snatching any hummingbirds out. No. No. Speak up for beauty and grace. hummingbirds. But I need to watch Superpower. Thanks for the recommendation. Flavio says, Fetterman's response reminds me of when this cooperating teacher was showing me around the school when I was a student, when I was student teaching, and she took me to the teacher's lounge and told me, we're on break. When you're on break, you can watch TV or listen to Rush. I had to bite my tongue not to retort, can I bring alcohol and OxyContin, you know, so I can feel like I'm there? The cowbells are flying fast and furious this evening. Well played, Flavio. Well played. Matt in San Francisco, decorum. So we're taking decorum advice from the lady who wore a Cruella de Vil coat while hollering at President Biden during the State of the Union? This wench doth protest too much. See, it's so easy to forget these things. Thank you for the reminder. I'd forgotten about the Cruella de Vil coat. But I still think that's pretty high quality. Yeah, I figure if I take up vaping and musicals and grabbing the hog. That's such a South Central PA thing to say. Grabbing the hog. They'd make me a damn folk hero. They are, in a word, just trash. They are. They're trash. I guess it's not a nice thing to refer to other people as trash. But, you know, trashy is as trashy does. By the way, since we're already there, apparently Clanny Oakley has said, he's a perfectly nice guy, but we're not going to see each other again. Took a couple of days, though, so I'm guessing he's ghosted her. Dude, I would, too. But wait a minute, dude. You own a bar that hosts drag shows. Maybe she didn't know who you were? But my dude, you had to know who she was. Wait, really? Had it been a dry spell, bud? Just wanted a quick one? Figured that was the way to go? She didn't know he was a Democrat. He apparently did know that she had done escort work in the past. I'm just speculating. And news came out that Nitwit Nero will be addressing some present and former members of the United Auto Workers, who are, of course, on strike against the Big Three. And the minute I saw that news, I felt just kind of, ugh. What self-respecting union member... Then again, maybe there's no point in me finishing this. What self-respecting union member would get in the same building as that adipose, gelatinous, waddling agglomeration of petty jealousies, petty grievances, and corruption? Well, apparently he's going to speak to the auto workers on September the 27th in Detroit. That's what he's going to do instead of showing up for the second Republican pageant. Sean Fain, the president of the UAW, didn't have any power over who they could... I don't know who they found or how they found them. You know, maybe these will be like stock stock photos. They'll find some guys and give them some UAW T-shirts and not say, no, no, cheer loud for Trump. No, you're not in the union. No, just pretend that you are. And Sean Fain is a badass. And he didn't pull any punches when he responded to the news. Every fiber of our union is being poured into fighting the billionaire class and an economy that enriches people like Donald Trump at the expense of workers. We can't keep electing billionaires and millionaires that don't have any understanding what it's like to live paycheck to paycheck and struggle to get by and expecting them to solve the problems of the working class. Now, Nitwit Nero hasn't said anything specific about the UAW strike, but he did go on to his rattle trap falling apart, perhaps soon financially collapsing, sketchy social media platform, Tripe Social, and posted a trope saying, union workers are being sold down the drain with this all-electric car scam. Dude can even fuck up a perfectly decent metaphor. One is not sold down the drain, one is sold down the river. Of course, I wouldn't expect the son of a Klansman to know that, but it's actually a reference to the hateful old days of chattel slavery in the United States. All electric car scam. What would that even be? Anybody? They're the future. I guess if we were maybe 120 years ago, Tangerine Tiberius would say,
these union buggy whip braiders are being sold down the drain with this internal combustion engine automobile scam.
I want the UAW to be successful. And I want them to go after Tesla next. And break Space Karen Leon scum like a twig across their knee. Yeah, meanwhile, the maggots you have always with you underneath the posting of Sean Fain's statement is some bot. We know because the end of her shitter account is 11797422. Donald Trump is not your average millionaire. He's probably not a millionaire. He actually does care and understand the plight of the working class and fights hard for them. One time. Name one. He's given so much to those in need and keeps giving. What? Paper towels? And keeps giving though he doesn't have to because he loves America. So, stay strong. Stay strong, Sean Fain. And don't let up. And nail Nitwit Nero at whatever he says. And then countersink it. Meanwhile, Kevers, man with the spine of silly putty McCarthy, had planned to have a little old vote in the House on trying to avert the shutdown by 30 days. Punchbowl News said today that Kevers doesn't have the vote to advance a bill. Because the maggots won't support it, and the feed-em carcass people won't support it, and the people who pick their teeth with their toenail clippings won't support it. And, by the way, neither will the Senate. Among other things, it doesn't maintain spending at current levels. It insists on an 8% cut in discretionary spending from most domestic agencies. And the White House said, you put that border shit in there and it's going to get vetoed. One Republican, a California Republican named Mike Garcia, speaking to Jamie Dupree at Punch Bowl, said, of the feed-em carcass, what we just witnessed was a conservative Republican Party, frankly, look and behave like the minority instead of the majority. Because the feed-em carcass could have had something, but they chose to have nothing. See, Kevin McCarthy can have the votes to pass a shutdown aversion that's 6 months or a year long. If he keeps money at current levels and reaches out to Hakeem Jeffries, and Hakeem Jeffries will get every Democrat to vote for it, and then he just needs a couple of sane Republicans. Oh, why do I continue? But at that point in time, Matt Gaetz, it just Gaetz worse, would call a vote to vacate the chair. And then the House would be speakerless. How about that? And Tommy Tuberville wouldn't have even had a damn thing to do with it. Mirabile dictu. Matt Gaetz threw a little bit of a fit in the last 24 hours or so, asking, how in the world am I all of a sudden the bad guy? It ain't all of a sudden. It's actually quite humorous. Because the people who do not walk on their mouths and breathe with their knuckles know exactly who and what Matt Gaetz is. You know, things like paying an underage sex worker with Venmo and leaving it public. Yeah. He showed up on Real America's Voice, the War Room, and had a conversation with the man who looks like rancid hot dog water smells.
We're wasting too much time. By the way, for all of those who are claiming that I am some sort of chaos agent, I would point you to the piece in the New York Times that lays out that the things that I am seeking are rational and reasonable, no matter what your politics are. And you know what? Again, as I've said, part of having open amendments,
they never
and putting
said
bills
that.
On the floor is that I know everything won't go my way. And I'm okay with that because the only way I get a team up here that can help me save the country is if people start having to take tough votes. And if they're not willing to do what is necessary on the economic side.
Yeah, because that's what Matt Gaetz is doing. Saving the country. Sure.
Well, but hold on, Steve. Now, why am I to blame for the chaos of the fact that these appropriations bills weren't here already? Right? Like, how come we didn't do defense appropriations right alongside the National Defense Authorizing Bill? Why didn't we do the Homeland Security appropriations right alongside H.R. 2? You see, this is not a bug of the system. It is a feature. They hold everything to the very end so that everyone feels rushed and under the pressure to avoid a shutdown, and that's how the administrative state continues.
You know, they say administrative state like it's a bad thing. The administrative state for all of their barking and grunting, bleating and hooting and howling and shrieking, is how this country works. I guess they think that that market's better than bureaucracy. I mean, look, it's big, it's messy. It's probably not big enough. You know, this goes back to what I've talked about over the years, this hue and cry on the part of Republicans for small government. How small? One little grandma? Maybe handwriting Social Security checks? Sure. No, says Steve in New York. Let it shut down in this case. That's the only way we get the leverage we should have. But beforehand, PR the media, who's responsible for it, they're not going to go along with it. Because they are more addicted to both-siderism than a crack-addicted sex worker scratching outside the 7-Eleven. Yeah, by the way, we were talking about marginal trailer queen. Well, apparently Marge still thinks she's vice presidential timber. Because she's got her first book coming out, y'all. She wore out 2 or 3 crayons writing it. And it'll be called, who could ever have predicted this, MTG. Today she said it'll be put out by a publishing house that's in alignment with Nitwit Nero. And she said, I want people to hear my side of the story. And then said, I'm always controversial, but I think this book might be a little controversial with some of the stories. I'll introduce myself to America as me, not the character that the mainstream media created and has sold to America over the past 5 years. We'll talk about my spork foot. No, I added that part. The birdcage liner, otherwise known as the Washington Examiner, said, Green acknowledged that the book has a higher purpose of laying the groundwork for a bid for higher office. I have options. Anything from a governor's race to a Senate seat. Green, who is an advisor to the former president, a regular at his rallies, said, I'm not too sure who Trump will pick for VP. I haven't closed the door on anything. Notably, the photo on the cover of her book is a silhouette of Green taking the stage at a Trump rally. A huge American flag is the backdrop. She said of the photo, I think I'm going to let people have their own interpretation. Oh, I can't wait for... How about some interpretive dance? Like an interpretive dance of the moment that she got her divorce papers. Is it Regnery? I don't know, Ralphs. It just said a Trump-aligned publishing house. Matt in San Francisco, Gates. So his argument is that the administrative state waits until the last minute and then shuts down. Is that the way the administrative state continues? My head hurts now. I know. I'm going to have to start doing rails of ibuprofen just right before airtime. It's not going to be pleasant.
It might sound a little stopped up like Nero.
Tom in sunny San Rafael. Hey, Tom. T-Rump and electric cars. Steam-powered cars were so popular at one time, and after all, he did want to have antiquated steam catapults on aircraft carriers.
I definitely love steam. Steam's great. We have the very best steam rooms and saunas at Magaloco and Bed Monster for our members. The lucky ones get to see me sitting naked in one. I take up every bit of two-thirds of one of those benches.
What a world. By the way, we're into the second hour of the program. That's flown by in a hurry. We got $1,675 going in terms of a fundraising hole. And it's a hard slog. It really, really is. And there are a bunch of bills that need to be paid. I wish I could tell you that, you know, we're fundraising to bring back Annette's masseuse and cabana boy. But alas, they're long gone. And the Olympic-sized pancreas-shaped swimming pool has been filled in. The Gulfstream 5 and the hangar have been... Well, the Gulfstream 5 was blown away to some right-wing broadcaster in
China.
And I think that's where the disassembled hangar went to. The Maybach... Well, the Maybach went off to the crusher. And now we're just... It basically trying to keep this little program alive. And make it all the way to 20 years of broadcasting on February the 4th, 2024. And I know the feeling. Arnold PA says, I love the show. Hate these people. Republicans are the scourge of the earth. Yeah, it extends beyond what, was it Steve Schmidt who said everything Trump touches dies? Or was it Rick Wilson? I don't know. They're interchangeable to me. But it's not just Trump. It's everything that he and his mouth-walking, knuckle-breathing followers touch. And make no mistake, they want to break the government. The cruelty is the point. They would love nothing better than for Granny to stop getting her Social Security check. For black lung checks to stop going out to men who can't breathe because of the years they spent in the mines. They don't even give a shit about their staff because their staff will be furloughed too. I mean, they are just, well, awful. Oh, we've got a National Ruble Association roulette wheel of death report. No death. That's good. But according to the Denver Post, a woman was told... Wonder who. A woman was told that she couldn't go into a bar in Denver, and so she pulled her Freedom Protector out of her purse and shot five people, none of them life-threateningly. What was she shooting into the ground and saying, "Dance, you little bastard, dance!" But I don't know. The woman hasn't been caught or identified. And she was barred from entering the public house Saturday night. The cops don't think any of the five shot were intentionally targeted. And just because you didn't die doesn't mean it didn't hurt. Unknown woman refused entry to bar in Denver. Lore, girl, get help. I mean, all it says is nobody knows who she is and she hasn't been caught. In theory, it could be Lore. Speaking of murder, there is a there's a case out there right now. A man is charged with murdering two women in Talibandiana, two teenage girls, Abigail Williams and Liberty German, in Delphi, Indiana. This happened back in 2017. And in the trial, the accused, Richard Allen, said that the girls were ritualistically sacrificed by Nazis, white nationalists. These euphemisms drive me mad. At the scene of the little girls' murders, they were teenage girls, there were symbols, quote, according to NBC 5, in the form of runes made up of sticks and fashioned with tree branches. According to the defense, it was the runes were left there by people who call themselves Odinites and practice a form of a Norse religion called Asatru, but they do it with a Nazi twist on it. According to the filings, detectives previously obtained information that connected two groups of men who practiced Odinism to the murders, one in or near Delphi and another that lived in Rushville. Writing in court documents, defense attorneys stated the letter regarding the possible connection between the killings and the group practicing Odinism in Rushville was withheld by the prosecution. The attorneys accused prosecutors as well as multiple law enforcement officers from hiding information about the Odinist connections to the murders, the documents revealed. Richard Allen, on the other hand, was arrested back in October of last year. He's 52 years old. Why, how does he know that? I mean, I could believe disgusting Nazis would murder young girls. Oh, and by the way, no more detail than this. Someone has found a motion in the waste paper receptacle in a house restroom . It's a motion to remove Kevin McCarthy as speaker as proposed by what did he say why does everybody think I'm the chaos agent, Matt Gaetz? Ralph's looking for Marginal Trailer Queen's book. I looked up in MTG and Marjorie Taylor Greene and got Magic the Gathering for MTG and nothing else. I'm sorry, that's just funny. Magic the Gathering. Off to Texas for us. In an article from the Houston Chronicle, they describe something that happened at the Hampshire Fannett Independent School District. Administrators in the middle school there sent an unnamed teacher home last week and have since fired her for reading to her class from a graphic novel adaptation of The Diary of Anne Frank. The graphic novel is entirely 100% faithful to the original Diary of Anne Frank. Curiously, previous versions of the Diary of Anne Frank have been expurgated versions. And so, in sharing the graphic novel with her students, she actually read to them from the portion where Anne Frank talks about, oh no, male and female genitalia to eighth graders. Because eighth graders have no idea that males and females have genitalia, or that humans do. And I'm sure no eighth grader in Texas has ever seen a bull or a cow or a male dog or a bitch or cats in heat. Well, the Houston Chronicle got the story from KFDM. And said, well, this here book ain't been approved for reading to the precious little children who don't know nothing about no genitals. Help me out here, because I never went through a female puberty. By eighth grade, aren't periods a thing? For a lot of girls? Yeah. 13, 14... Yeah. Well, it turns out the school, the independent school district, lied, because when KFDM went digging around, turns out the graphic novel was on a reading list sent to parents at the start of the school year. Diary of Anne Frank usually has some resonance with kids around 8th, 9th grade. Because, of course, the Nazis murdered her when she was 15 years old. And you can read her words. Despite it all, I still think people are basically good. Then they killed her. Nazis killed her. She was probably ratted out by an uncle. But Nazis killed her. Nazis, just like we have Nazis in the United States of America today, who, according to that story out of Talibandiana, may have murdered a pair of 15-year-old girls of their own. Wonder where they would get that idea. Here's hoping the teacher sues. Gets herself a school district. A good observation, Tom, in sunny Santa Fe. Gates is motion found in a bathroom. I think that's called a movement, not a motion. Ah! You get a rousing cowbell for that one. That was high quality. Oh, by the way, I mentioned the great Sturm und Drang in the Senate over decorum. Well, my junior senator, Shelley Moore Capito, who basically looks like her daddy in a bad wig, said she was shocked. She just couldn't stand the thought that there wouldn't be no decorum in the Senate of the new United States of America no more. This is the moment when decorum goes away. Do tell. This. A brilliant senator. Is the end of decorum. Not a member of that self-same Senate, Josh Hall and ass, waving to domestic terrorists, encouraging them to attack the Capitol building. No, 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 that didn't affect decorum in the Senate of the United States. Hell no! the senior senator from Alabama, single-handedly trying to cripple the armed services. Nah, that doesn't affect decorum. You know why? Because none of his Republican colleagues will call him on it and tell him that he will not be allowed to play in any of their reindeer games if he doesn't quit this shit. Hey, Tom in sunny San Rafael, thank you so much. Tom just kept us from being a goose egg. And so we are now down to 1655. 1655 to get caught up, pay some bills. Thank you, Tom. Thank you so much. This idea that there even is decorum in the Senate of the United States is just nauseating. This one's a little fun. Okay, backstory. Alex Jones has had a number of, well, troubling help there at InfoWars, where they sell the paleo chocolate chicken bone nutritional beverage that will literally turn your mouth inside out and make your esophagus see the light of day. It's so nasty. What? Fetterman, Matt in San Francisco, says he should come in shirtless with a... Yes, Matt, yes. He should come in shirtless with a buffalo horn cap on just to fuck with him. Yes. Did anybody say decorum? Hey, Rafaelito, over there. Yeah, you. Is this okay? Because the last I checked, this is okay with you. How about you, Shelley Moore Camel Toe? Is this all right? Yeah? Josh Hall an ass? Hey, you, Mike Lee, constitutional scholar who was under a desk on January 6th. How you feel about this? How decorous is this? Kirsten Cinema, you want to go out and rub some poopy on the walls? Yeah. But back to InfoWars. So there was a development in January 6th news. Ray Epps has been attacked, stalked, had his and his wife's life threatened over paranoid conspiracy fantasies of the maggot right who supports domestic terror attacks on the capital of the United States. Well, Ray Epps has recently been indicted. The maggot said he was an undercover FBI plant. And he's been hit with today he was charged with one misdemeanor count of disorderly or disruptive conduct on restricted grounds. The charge came by way of information, which means that he has already struck a deal with the prosecution to enter a plea. He will enter the plea on September 20th before Chief Judge James Boasberg. Ray Epps, according to the information, did knowingly and with intent to impede and disrupt the orderly conduct of government business and official functions, engage in disorderly and disruptive conduct in and within such proximity to a restricted building and grounds, that is, any posted, cordoned off, and otherwise restricted area within the United States Capitol and its grounds, where the Vice President was and would be temporarily visiting, when and so that such conduct did in fact impede and disrupt the orderly conduct of government business and official functions and attempted and conspired to do so. The conspired part should be interesting, because that means he was in agreement with one or more persons, and that someone took a substantial step toward the completion of the conspiracy. Wonder if he'll sing. He didn't go in the Capitol, Ray Epps. He was just on the grounds. Edward J. Ungvarsky. Man, this is the January 6th, if nothing, you know, it's kind of like what the guy at CBS Viacom say. Donald Trump may not be good for America, but he's great for CBS. You know, January 6th might not have been good for America, but it's been great for the D.C. bar. But Edward J. Ungvarsky said, the information's filed with anticipation of entry of a guilty plea tomorrow to the charge. It's really all there is. Speaking to the J6 committee last year, Ray Epps said, I never intended to break the law. It's not in my DNA. I'm sure you've looked up my record. I don't break the law. And he has since filed a defamation lawsuit against Fox News TV Radio Rwanda, as well as, of course, testicle-toasting man of masculine masculinity, Tuckio Rose Carlson, for willfully, wantonly, and maliciously spreading conspiracy theories, saying that Ray Epps was, in fact, a stoolie for the feds. Well, all of this was grist for the mill today over on the Alex Jones Show, where the show was guest hosted by some weird beard dude named Owen Schroyer. Who himself has been charged as one of the domestic terrorists of January 6, 2021. And told the weirdos who live in bell jars and listen to Alex Jones that he's appealing his case. I'll get the hockey puck.
This has had such an impact. And again, I thank this audience. I thank all the members of the media that have covered this case. I thank all the Americans, not just for supporting me, but understanding the larger issue to support free speech and truth in journalism and justice in America. They have now charged Ray Epps. One charge for Ray Epps. I got four. Never went in. Never encouraged anybody to go in. Ray Epps did. He now has one charge. Now, this saga is kind of unreal. First, Ray Epps is on the FBI's list. Then he gets removed from the list. And they say, nope, nothing to see here. Then his text messages and communications leaked where he's bragging about, he says he orchestrated the entire thing. Folks, they have my cell phones. They have my electronic data. I never said anything even close to that. I mean, never said anything like that, never would. And if I did, you know you'd hear about it. Nothing exists like that. Ray Epps, on the other hand, it does, in multiple occurrences, including the night before and the day of, encouraging people to go into the Capitol. He faces one charge. So what is this really about? Well, it looks like a cover your ass by the government, doesn't it? Could it be because of this tweet from Tim Pool and other coverage like it? Tim Pool last week after seeing my sentencing. Owen Schroyer, quote, death to tyrants, 100 days in prison, recommended. Ray Epps, we have to go into the Capitol. No charges as of yet, defended by media and Democrats. Folks, there was such backlash from my case. it is likely they've now been forced to charge Ray Epps.
Have you ever even heard of Owen Schroyer? This weirdo is desperate for attention because what he did was sufficient to get him 100 days in jail. And there's no guarantee of no jail time for Ray Epps. He enters his plea tomorrow. He will be subsequently sentenced. Owen Schroyer is, in fact, a domestic terrorist. Plain and simple. Every domestic terrorist did not go into the Capitol. But then again, he's talking to a group of people who tune into a guy who, you know, sells paleo chocolate chicken bone nutritional beverage, for God's sakes. And who routinely believe him when he says that the frogs are turning trans. And that there are strange hybrids of monkeys and jellyfish for sale in the wet markets of Old Kowloon. They'll believe anything over there at Alex Jones's joint.
This whole thing is so obviously injustice, it's unbelievable.
So obviously injustice. Yeah, he's a journalist. Big-time practitioner of the art of word-knowing. Obviously unjust, Owen. Dude's wearing a sport coat with an American pin on it, and it's blue over a waffle-knit Henley? Okay, Owen.
And that's exactly what's going on here. This is injustice. This is the injustice system, and the American people see through it. I'm still fighting just to stay out of jail.
Well, here's hoping your fight is wildly unsuccessful. Emilio adds, not just a buffalo cap, buffalo and open nipple piercings, naturally. P.S., Emilio says, I do not have nipple piercings. Well, Emilio, you do you. Yes, that is Owen Schroyer. Is that Owen Schroyer you've got on your face? Nipple piercings. Emilio! Theo with a note. Asatru and Nazis. Aha! Hi, Theo. And from involvement with Wicca and its prison ministries, I know that a form of Asatru, an Icelandic branch of Scandinavian paganism, has been practiced in prisons for some years by neo-Nazis. It's not readily distinguishable from other white boy prison gangs, and appalls us Wiccans because of its power to keep practitioners trapped within its separatist mentality, even after they're back out in the real world. Asatru was also supposedly practiced by Hitler, of course, which adds to its selling power to gullible initiates, whether or not it was ever true. Well, apparently Odin didn't do anything for the little short guy, the short little dude with the Charlie Chaplin mustache. I'd say it's not much of a religion as a going concern if it encourages you to swallow cyanide and then finish the job with a bullet to the brain. But then again, I encourage all Nazis to follow his example. Less Nazis, better planet. And Stephen New York, I said January 6th may not be great for America, but it's great for the D.C. bar. Good for the D.C. bar, says Steve. Which one? The Dubliner or the old Ebbets Grill? Well, I personally favor the Dubliner because it's right next to the Phoenix Hotel. which is right next to Union Station, and it's central to Capitol Hill. I don't think I've ever been to the old Ebbets Grill, but if you want to know my favorite watering hole in D.C., nobody's asking, but I'll tell you anyway. It's on Capitol Hill, and I think it's called the Capitol Grill. It's up on Capitol Hill, past the Capitol, past the Libraries of Congress. It's a brief walk from Capitol Hill. I've seen no small number of members of the House in there, mostly Democrats. They've always got good food. Oh, what is the name of that place? It was featured on Diners, Drive-Ins, and Dives or whatever. Now I have to find it. It's on the other side of the hill from that skeevy joint called Union Pub. Saw a rat the size of a possum in there one night. Let's see. No, it's not that. No. Nope. Nope. Let's keep looking. Sorry for the dead air. The Tune In. There it is. Yeah, the Tune In. It is a classic dive bar, great food. There's a memorial seat there from a guy who sat there for years. Absolutely. And oh God. They make a crippling margarita. Tune In. Somewhere I've still got a t-shirt. For the record, Emilio says, I meant Owen Schroyer as some incurable facial malady. I thought it might have been something that Lauren Boebert caused him to emit. God, I'm so sorry. Okay, this is not a TV viewing tip or a go-to-the-movie tip or anything like that. Over the summer, late in the summer, an independently produced film that basically was cosplay for maggots called The Sound of Freedom made a shocking amount of money on a very small budget, and caused people who should have known better to say things like, "Men, you really need to get out there and see this." That particular quote came from some NFL dude bro, whose name I prefer not to remember, apparently. The Sound of Freedom is all about the desperate attempt to stop sex trafficking. Sex trafficking is a horrible problem. It was breathily publicized based on a true story. Well, it's all done in the style of investigative journalism, and right-wing MAGA dude bros went out in droves to see it. Yeah, well, then there's this. An article in Vice News Let me just share the headline. Sound of Freedom producer felt the naked breasts of apparently underage trafficking victim. Files from a local, a joint local and federal criminal investigation released to Vice News described the video evidence of the incident, which took place in Mexico on an Operation Underground Railroad mission. The man at the center of this, because of course, is the executive producer, an executive producer of Sound of Freedom. It's supposed to be about the exploits of a dude named Tim Ballard, who is an anti-trafficking activist. The only problem is the film purports to be a true story, but is actually wildly fictionalized. Tim Ballard founded an outfit called Operation Underground Railroad, OUR. It's private. Ballard funded it. And at one point in time in Cabo San Lucas, Mexico, 2016, Paul Hutchinson can be seen on the video groping the breasts of an underage victim of sex trafficking. The footage was actually described in detail by an investigator with the Davis County Attorney's Office as part of a criminal investigation that they carried out with the FBI of Ballard and OUR, Operation Underground Railroad. They closed out the investigation earlier this year. No charges were filed. At the time, in 2016, the trafficking victim was believed to be, by both Peter Hutchinson and operatives for Operation Underground Railroad, be around 16 years old. The report also says that OUR thought the footage had been destroyed. Gets creepier and creepier. In the video, Peter Hutchinson says he's worried about whether Mexican authorities could prosecute him for feeling up the breasts of an underage sex trafficking victim. He was talking to a guy named Matt Osborne, an operative for OUR, who went on to say, don't worry about it. And said, I don't think we should show the video to the federal government. Matt Osborne is the president and chief operating officer of Operation Underground Railroad. Because Ballard resigned from the organization after an internal investigation presented concerns of his Ballard. The anti-sex trafficking activist. Yeah, there were allegations substantial enough for him to step down of sexual misconduct. Hutchinson, on the other hand, Paul Hutchinson, aged 52, calls himself an anti-trafficking activist, a philanthropist, and an entrepreneur who works in ballistic protection technology and private vaults and comes out of the anti-trafficking movement in Utah. He's also part of the Child Liberation Foundation. And when Vice contacted him, he said, yeah, I was a fundraiser and an operative for OUR, but I split with Ballard a lot of years ago for similar reasons as those you're bringing to light in your stories. What's curious is that Paul Hutchinson, when Vice told him about the description of him feeling up the naked breasts of the trafficking victim, he didn't dispute it. Instead, he said, well, she wasn't a minor. I got a sworn affidavit from Mexican federal police saying she was over 18. He's got an affidavit, but despite the fact that he was asked repeatedly by Vice News for it, he never copped to it. He never provided it. Among other things, he posed as a wealthy sex tourist in Mexico. Again, this guy is not operating under the aegis of the federal government. He's just a lone wolf. Emphasis on the word wolf. A trafficker, or what we might also call in this country a pimp, was showing him pictures of sex workers, and he asked for younger girls in Spanish, más fresca. More fresh. And Hutchinson said he wanted girls as young as 14. Now, to be fair, the files don't say that Hutchinson was trying to do anything but identify and expose traffickers. On the other hand, when Vice News reached out to federal agents who actually do this as a profession, they said, no, you don't do that. Anti-trafficking workers have said for years that Operation Underground Railroad was actually creating demand for younger girls such that Mexican drug cartels and trafficking cartels and the like would be more inclined to go and kidnap them to meet the market demand. Oh, and by the way, since we had the story earlier, as in last week, of Bishop Willard Romney deciding he didn't want to go senating anymore, now we understand why. I mean, God, there's not going to be any decorum in the Senate anymore. And Bishop Willard Romney is nothing if not decorous. Well, rumors are flying out behind the Zion Curtain that Tim Ballard, the same Tim Ballard in this story, is probably going to run for Willard's vacant seat. And when asked for comment, he said nothing. On the other hand, Operation Underground Railroad said, well, there's a lot to the story, a very dangerous situation, and I'm happy to let the world know the details when the time's right. That was Paul Hutchinson. Every operator who was present stands behind me in how I reacted to the situation. I have zero reservations as to how I handled myself undercover. You don't find trafficked children in the lobby of the Ritz-Carlton. We had to go to the most dangerous places on the planet to find the children. All my undercover work was done with integrity and honor, especially when I was groping the little girl's titties. I added that last part. And And of course, it was all part and parcel of first a TV show, then a movie, and a documentary TV show called The Abolitionists, which makes Tim Ballard out to be some sort of hero, carrying out what are described by Vice as private undercover operations. By the way, I should have issued a trigger warning and a content warning on this one. I'm sorry, I'm trying to get better about that. But this is nothing that private actors need to be doing. They're basically rogues and mercenaries. And as we can see, it's going to be a catapult, perhaps, for Tim Ballard's political ambitions. Now, as to the description of the video, what it says, it was shot in February 2016, and an investigator named Brian Purdy of the Davis County Attorney's Office wrote, Paul Hutchinson and his team are standing in the street area talking with local men. They're going across the street into a club. Females are seen walking toward them down a staircase. A female gets to the bottom of the stairs and there is an adult male standing to her left side. The male is wearing a light-colored shirt with long sleeves and a necktie. The male uses both of his hands to lift the female's shirt up to her shoulders, exposing her naked breasts. While he continues to hold the female's shirt up with both hands, another adult male approaches from directly in front of the female. This male, identified as Paul Hutchinson based on his own statements on a phone call to Matt Osborne, is wearing a light-colored shirt with short sleeves. Paul approaches the female and lifts both of his hands and places them on each of the female's naked breasts. The female uses her hand to push down Paul's hands and pulls her shirt down. There's another female standing above them higher on the stairway wearing a dark-colored skirt, shorts, and a dark-colored tube-top shirt. Paul leans in and kisses the first female on the side of the cheek. And the guy in the white shirt goes outside with Paul Hutchinson and says, you want more touch, feel? Oh, no more touch. Another guy says, you like more 16? I got IDs. Paul Hutchinson then gives them money for showing them to me right there. Then there's the second video, because there's more than one. And the description says, another girl like her, inaudible. 16, she's 16. And one of the Operation Underground Railroad operatives says, let's get the hell out of here. Yeah, let's get out of here. I'm down a grand. Not let's get out of here. I'm disgusted with myself for what I've already done. Let's get out of here. I'm down a grand. And as the men laugh, another voice off camera says, for $1,000, you got your hands on some breasts. And another male voice says, remember, these are anti-sex trafficking operatives. Kind of makes me wonder, you remember when Rush Limbaugh took his all-boys weekend to the Dominican Republic with a bogus bottle of Viagra in someone else's name? You know, at the Dominican Republic, where the sex trafficking of boys is well known. My friends, I was simply going down there to get away. I work very hard at the behind the golden EIB microphone. I wonder if he told people he was investigating sex trafficking. A second male voice says, what was I going to do? And you can hear a bunch of guys laughing. Laughing.
Okay, she's 16 here. Feel them. They're nice. I'm like, shit, those are 16. Ha, 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 ha.
The first male voice says, you think they're underage, huh? Third male voice says, oh, yeah,
I put money on that.
And then the first male voice says, yeah, those girls were young, man. Second guy says, I don't know how wise it was to grab that girl's boobs, though. And the first male voice then says,
you didn't get that on video or anything, did you?
The article then says, in a statement to Vice News, Hutchinson wrote,
in regards to the undercover mission in Cabo San Lucas,
undercover mission, my.
23 victims were liberated and some very bad men are now in prison. Your reference to the trafficker testing our legitimacy is a non-story. I have a sworn affidavit by the federal police saying she was over 18.
I'll bet you can get one of those for $100 from the Mexican federal police. Then comes the conspiracy. February 28th, 2016. Paul Hutchinson and Matt Osborne on the phone. It was a speakerphone. It was filmed in a room with Hutchinson and several other men. Matt Osborne talks to the videographer who filmed the call and says, they talk about a hard drive with the footage on it that he shot. And Hutchinson then brings up the breast groping. Apparently, Hutchinson referred to himself as Paul Stone during the undercover operation. He says,
am I going to get in big trouble from the Mexican authority? Is Paul Stone going to get in big trouble with the Mexican authority for touching a 16-year-old on film? When you get the hard drive, I have to confess something. But I believe that it helped make them really believe we weren't police officers in any way. So we were taken to the strip club. And another guy says, okay, so the very first time that V was vetting is out, and he took us to the strip club, and the owner of the strip club brought down the minors, and V's the very first time V's shown us any minors, and brought down these minors. Well, Paul Stone.
It's Paul Hutchinson talking, referring to himself in the third person.
Well, I was standing there at the bottom of the stairs. These two girls work in the strip club. These two minors come down. The owner of the strip club pulls up one of their shirts and grabs one of Paul Stone's hands and places it on her breast so it's on the video. I just want to find out if I'm going to get in big trouble from the Mexican authority for touching a 16-year-old on film.
And there's only one problem. The Mexican didn't reach out and take his hand and put it on the girl's breast. He did it with no help whatsoever. Matt Osborne asks him,
Is it clear they pulled it out? Put your hand there?
The guy who had written the description, the investigator for Davis County, he highlighted Paul Hutchinson's statement there and said, lie! And wrote in the margin, Paul puts both hands on voluntarily. Hutchinson, meanwhile, answering Matt Osborne's question, says, it's not clear on the video. I was standing on the side, and he grabbed the hand from down on the right hand, my right-hand side, as he pulled up her shirt and put him up. And he raises his hands up in the video. And so we feel like if we were all there, and we all feel like, I mean, we were all there, weren't we? It wasn't just me. We were all there.
And we all feel like if I'd hesitated, oh, yeah, I'm not really interested in touching that right now. It's pulling it up. I think it would have thrown up a lot of red flags. But that's on the hard drive. I just wanted to run that by and see what your thoughts are.
Matt Osborne responds and says,
yeah, I don't think at this point that'll be an issue. Maybe if it was the Mexicans. And we're sending it just the Mexicans. I don't want this video to be HSI, U.S. Embassy, because I'm sure... And I've done it before, one time. I'm sure that technically you guys probably entrap some of these people. Try not to, yeah. I've done it before accidentally, so I'm just content this isn't an issue.
Then there's a guy sitting on a couch, and he says to Paul Hutchinson,
the only thing you have to do is not tell your bishop.
We're not talking about a Roman Catholic bishop here. We're talking about a bishop like Bishop Willard Romney is a former bishop. And see, they didn't really give a fuck about older girls. In the investigator's notes, there's another passage where Paul and the other male are joking that they're old. A pimp is showing photos of girls. And, oh, they're old. 22, 30, 40
years old.
And the pimp says 16. And they say, who?
I don't know them, but these are the girls.
Paul pulls out his wallet and gives the guy $20 and then says, I'll give you 100 just to see them. And he says, más pequeño. And the guy keeps showing them girls in their 20s or 30s. But that's not who they want. They're, well, it's too late for them. And so he keeps pressing for younger girls. And then the trafficker talks to a girl there and tells them to go out and get la más chicas. La más chicas, 16, 14, 15, he pay you in dollars. Meanwhile, maybe I should have saved this for tomorrow. Meanwhile, Tim Ballard is saying that Vice is a tabloid that is often hostile to people of faith. Oh, he's got faith all right. But remember, Tim Ballard was bounced out of our... for sexual improprieties. And our spokes creep said,
these allegations have been raised previously, written about by Vice, and thoroughly investigated by the Davis County District Attorney. That investigation concluded without filing of any charges.
Maybe the federal government needs to take a peep.
Following Tim Ballard's departure from our 3 months ago, we have been working tirelessly to improve the efficiency and effectiveness of our domestic and international operations.
Color me a little bit skeptical about a bunch of middle-aged men claiming to be rescuing girls pulled into sex trafficking in the name of Jesus.
At our, we are proud to support law enforcement in liberating any person in the grips of human trafficking or exploitation, and we strive to ensure ongoing aftercare for all those affected. Our resources have contributed to the arrest of over 7,400 suspected predators and have impacted the lives of over 7,800 individuals. Currently, we are carrying out an average of 5 missions per week worldwide.
That means they're visiting whorehouses all over the world, posing as sex tourists, and perhaps groping young girls' bodies.
We are committed to this important work until everyone in need is safe.
And once the story published, suddenly Matt Osborne was there.
We promptly notified the Mexican federal police. The Mexican police had investigated the incident, did not press charges as the woman was an adult. But Paul Hutchinson's actions do not represent our standard operating procedure and were inappropriate regardless if the woman was an adult or not.
Wonder how much it costs to have the Mexican federal police not file any charges. Wonder why they didn't go looking for hookers in, say, the barrios of Tijuana, but instead went to a resort town like Cabo San Lucas. Just asking questions. That's all. Well, feel like I'm going to have to shower and bleach after the program now. We are into the third hour of the program. We are at $1,665 to go for coming up to speed in terms of funding of the program. I'm sorry. I have to say it. People actually send me notes saying, say more about fundraising. Okay. $1,665. If we could bring it down even, well, if we brought it down by $200, that would make up for, we'd be done with Monday of last week. Yeah, what was Monday? 18, that was the 11th. PayPal buttons at headon.live, main page. Patreon is under the contribute tab. We will be approaching the dreaded $2,000 mark tomorrow. Oh, and speaking of sex predators, Russell Brand is the latest. Because while he hasn't been charged with any crimes, several women have accused Russell Brand. I don't know what to call him. Is he a comedian? I don't know. But the Sunday Times, the Times of London, and Channel 4 Dispatches all worked together on an investigation. Several women came forward and said he sexually assaulted and raped them in the years between 2006 and 2013. Which also happens to be the same time period in which he married and then divorced Katy Perry. He was in his 30s at the time, and one of the women interviewed said that she was 16 when she entered an emotionally and sexually abusive 3-month relationship with Russell Brand. Another woman said he raped her in his Los Angeles home in 2012. A third woman said he forced himself on her in 2013 at his place in West Hollywood. Brand is complaining that it was all consensual. I was always transparent about being promiscuous then, almost too transparent, and I'm being transparent about it now. to see that transparency metastasized into something criminal, that I absolutely deny. So he's doing the I did it, but they wanted it defense. Well, YouTube has demonetized him. Oh, I've been canceled. That's what I've been. I've been canceled. The Beeb has yanked some of his shows from its online streamer. YouTube said they moved to protect users in light of serious allegations against the creator. So he's not going to be paid for ads that run with his videos. Those ads, by the way, are mostly paranoid fantasies. Things like, what really started the Hawaii fires? And COVID SAR admits lockdowns were never about science. Because YouTube's happy to run that bilious crap. That repulsive disinformation. And for the life of them, YouTube can't seem to pull down other hateful, on its face, hateful content. Just as an aside, some people have asked me over the years why I don't put my videos up on YouTube. I think if I did, I'd probably last about 10 seconds before an entire brigade of transphobes would just click the notify button, and I'd be demonetized before I was ever monetized. You know, you got to get to like 10,000 subscribers before you ever make a nickel. And they do that. YouTube will gladly leave up all manner of phobic content, xenophobic, racist, misogynist, conspiracy theories like, what really started the Hawaii fires? Anthony Fauci should be in prison. But for some reason or another, the algorithm seemed to have a right-wing bent. And shit gets brigaded in a heartbeat. So that's the answer. It would be a whole lot of work with very little return. And if we ever find some other manner, maybe then. By the way, going back to Nitwit Nero at the beginning of the program.
This old electric car scam.
Brother Deacon Asa pointed out, the all-electric car scam is his close and personal buddy's electric car company, Tesla. Once again, you could not give me a Tesla. Try me and find out. That's a joke for the lurkers out there on the margins. I wonder what Katy Perry would have to say to that business about Russell Brand. There's a hearing been set out in Colorado for October 30th on the lawsuit in Colorado to keep Nitwit Nero off the ballot under the 14th Amendment. Noah Bookbinder is the president of Citizens for Responsibility and Ethics in Washington, CREW, and said, we will be presenting the case that Donald Trump is disqualified under the 14th Amendment at an evidentiary hearing in court in Colorado starting October 30th. CREW and co-counsel look forward to presenting our evidence on behalf of our Colorado plaintiffs. if he gets an adverse ruling, Marcus Aurelius will then send the case onward toward the Supreme Court of the United States. And while it will not be a case of first impression for the Supreme Court, they'll probably view it that way. Oh, and this out of the Buckeye State, since we were talking about child sex trafficking and grooming. Story comes out of Columbus, Ohio. It was late in the evening when a distraught father called the Columbus PD because daddy had found out that a creepy man had groomed his 11-year-old daughter into sending him pictures of herself. This is sickening. Daddy did all the right things. It took the cops 6 hours to show up. Both a male and a female officer came to the home. And remember, this is a matter of grooming. And fortunately, Daddy has had video of the cops. This stinks because the first thing the cops did was to blame the child. Daddy originally called because he wanted the cops to talk to his daughter about the photos she took and sent and to whom. And to get her to realize what the guy was doing. That's when the woman, one of the cops, says,
"Well, you know,
your daughter could probably get charged with child porn if she produced the images." And daddy says, "Who? She can? She's 11 years old." And the cop says, "She's creating it, right?" And daddy's beginning to bug out, and he says, "She's 11 years old. Doesn't matter. She's still making porn." And daddy says, "No, she's being manipulated by a grown-ass adult on the internet." And the woman says, "Is she taking pictures, though?" At which point daddy says, "You guys have a nice evening. Thank you for coming." They showed up at midnight. The little girl had been in bed for a while. Well, the Columbus PD went into damage control mode, as PDs will, and said,
"The Columbus Division of Police acknowledges a video being shared on social media involving two officers responding to a call for service. The Department of the Inspector General, which investigates complaints of misconduct and or excessive use of force by sworn personnel, has opened an inquiry into this incident.
The Division of Police regards all allegations of sexual misconduct with the utmost seriousness, and include incidents involving minors are handled with the highest degree of concern. Sexual assault unit detectives were immediately notified of the incident and have since initiated an investigation. We'll deal with the little 11-year-old pornographer with the harshest of laws.
No, I added that last part. Years old, getting groomed. You can almost hear the Columbus cops. Was he a drag queen? No. We don't care. No, don't ask that. I was going to say, how much grosser can this country get? Don't. No. And speaking of grown men being gross, to young people, we're back to U.S. Representative Derek Van Orden. A good, God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing, Christ-centered, evangelical, fundamentalist, amosexual, Christian Republican from Wisconsin. You may recall that word got out a little while back about an incident in which Representative Van Orden vulgarly berated Capitol pages. Well, Representative Mark Pocan, a good man, interviewed by State's Newsroom today, said he has actually seen the security footage of the incident in which Van Orden upbraided the youngsters. He's seen it from two different angles. Mark Pocan went on to say there was about 15 people in with him, Van Orden, and there was another tour group also in the rotunda. They split as soon as Van Orden started screaming vulgarities at the teens. The kids were laying on the floor in the rotunda because you have to lay on the floor in the rotunda if you want to take pictures of the ceiling of the rotunda at night. I'm trying to remember. Is that where the painting is of the apotheosis of George Washington? Well, when Van Orden shows up, they jump to their feet. And this good Christian walked over to the rope area and continued to scream vulgarities at them. And then Pocan added that based upon the video, he walked back to his group and took sort of a curtsy bow to them. Oh, really? And at the time when the news came out, he said,
well, I corrected them.
I corrected them because they were being disrespectful of the rotunda because it was used as a Civil War field hospital. They were Senate pages. Van Orden really didn't have a right to say a word to them. And yesterday, Mark Pocan released a statement in which he said, this video was bad and unbecoming of a member of Congress. Oh, Representative Pocan. This is probably not the time to be saying that, given that, well, Lauren and Marge are out there. No, he's right. This video is bad and unbecoming of a member of Congress. There is no way to prove Derek was drunk, but this is not behavior a sober or sane person would do. He went on to say that Van Orden looked unbalanced and had belligerent hand gestures while he was harassing the pages, and that he towered over them. This was abusive behavior intended to frighten these pages, and continued, what he did does not reflect Wisconsin values, and he owes each of the pages and his constituents an apology. Pocan explained, we had asked to have the video released because it wasn't passing the smell test compared to what Van Orden was saying about Civil War history of the Rotunda. The parents of the pages, on the other hand, reached out to Senator Schumer and said, listen, please don't make the video public because we're afraid that the Republicans will retaliate against our children. You know, because that's who the maggots are. That's the kind of vulgar, vindictive, hateful scum they are. And Mark Pocan said, I had a duty to see the footage. I was being the eyes and ears for people in Wisconsin. Pocan still hasn't spoken to Van Orden about it. But nonetheless, Van Orden's spokescreep said, Derek Van Orden came to Congress to work for the people of Wisconsin's 3rd Congressional District. Right now he is laser-focused on making sure the government doesn't shut down. Well, maybe you should go over and scream at Matt Gaetz a little bit, Derek. These people. According to the Iowa Capital Dispatch, the lawn in the park outside the United States Senate, I see where it sprouted signs today, 300 of them. All 300 signs had the name of a military nominee whose confirmation has been blocked by Alabama senior Senator Tommy Tuber, because Tommy Tuber despises women, and the Pentagon has at least something resembling a modicum of respect for them, and will support them when they need to go somewhere besides maggot states for reproductive care. Democratic senators, but not one goddamn Republican showed up. The whole thing was organized by Vote Vets Political Action Committee. Senator Amy Klobuchar from Minnesota said, I literally cannot believe that Tommy Tuberville is still doing this. I hope that he comes out of that building and sees these 300 signs that are in front of us right now, because every single picture, every single name, every single title represents someone who has decided to put their life on the line for our country. She was not the only Democrat, but more importantly, precisely zero Republicans showed up to speak up for the military that they have long dragged like a little red wagon to show how much they love the country. Hey, Billable Rick. Cowbell for Emilio, what are you doing with that Owen Schroyer on your face? I'm sure Emilio appreciates that, Billable. Nice to hear from you. And adds, Russell Brand is a British actor, comedian, best known for his role of the stoned rocker in the movie Get Him to the Greek. I don't know if I've ever even seen that. Thank you, Billable. Well, we are almost done with the program. We've got about 28 minutes left, but it is a Tuesday. That means we have the Green News Report from Brad Friedman and Desi Duane, and I hate to just blow past them, especially on a 3-hour filler obster. So, Brad, Desi, what's shaking?
It's Tuesday, September 19, 2023.
And these guys have been playing us for fools. They've been playing all of us for fools.
The state of California sues major oil companies over climate damages. Another investigation shows big oil executives plotted to deceive the public, discredit climate science, and delay action. Plus, protesters demand the end of the fossil fuel era as UN General Assembly gets underway.
Good luck with that. No, seriously, good luck with that. All of those stories and more straight ahead. From BradBlog.com, I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comment.
Climate change is a global issue. It calls for a coordinated global policy response, not piecemeal litigation that benefits attorneys and politicians.
Says Mike Wirth, CEO of Chevron. So you know you can take that to the bank. No, seriously, you can take that to the bank. This is your Green News Report. Okay, Desi Doyen, we have been tracking, warning, concerned about this for at least 2 weeks, but Hurricane Lee is finally over?
Yes. Over the weekend, Hurricane Lee finally made landfall as a post-tropical storm in Nova Scotia on Saturday, bringing heavy rain, coastal flooding, and wind damage linked to the deaths of two people and knocking out power to tens of thousands along the U.S. East Coast and Atlantic Canada.
Sounds like a bullet was dodged there?
Yes, it wasn't nearly as damaging as it could have been.
Good.
In other news, in a bombshell new investigation, The Wall Street Journal reveals the oil industry is still deceiving the public about climate science.
You don't say.
Previous revelations showed that Exxon and other oil majors knew as far back as the 1950s that fossil fuels caused dangerous man-made climate change and then spent millions to mislead the public about it. The Journal revealed new internal documents uncovered in a lawsuit showing that starting in 2006, after Exxon publicly conceded that fossil fuels cause global warming, their executives then plotted to muddle and downplay climate science findings to protect their profits.
Of course.
Exxon is a defendant in dozens of liability lawsuits accusing the company of deception. Over the weekend, California added another one, suing five of the world's biggest oil companies. California alleges that ExxonMobil, Shell, BP, ConocoPhillips, Chevron, and their lobbyists in the American Petroleum Institute knew for more than 50 years about the risks and harms of using fossil fuels and mounted a decades-long disinformation campaign to discredit climate science and deceive investors and the public, all while causing billions of dollars in damages to communities and the environment.
That's a serious matter. If California was its own country, it would be, I think, the fifth largest economy in the world. So they have some firepower to bring behind this.
Yes, they do. California's lawsuit details decades of oil industry climate disinformation and claims that the oil companies created a public nuisance, destroyed natural resources, and violated California's false advertising and product liability laws. The state is demanding the creation of a special fund for oil companies to pay for climate damages in the state. A spokesperson for Shell said the company understands the need to address climate change, but believes that the courts are not the right venue. But California's Democratic Governor Gavin Newsom wasn't buying it.
The climate crisis is, after all, fossil fuel crisis, period, full stop. And these guys have been playing us for fools. They've been playing all of us for fools. They continue to play us for fools. The scale and scope of what the state of California can do, we think can move the needle. It sure as hell can do this, and forgive me for being long-winded, it can illuminate their deceit. It can illuminate their deception and their lies over the course of 50, 60, 70 years they've been lying to you.
Well, this will be interesting to find out. Who is more powerful, the fifth largest economy in the world were all the oil companies.
Also in California, state lawmakers passed two new transparency laws that require companies to disclose their actual greenhouse gas emissions to investors, not just direct emissions from operations, but more critically, what's called Scope 3 emissions from customers using their products. By far, the lion's share of emissions, especially for the oil industry. And finally, in New York City over the weekend, a massive march kicked off the Climate Week conference alongside the annual United Nations General Assembly meeting. In the largest climate rally since the pandemic, 75,000 people took to the streets to demand world leaders end the fossil fuel era. They demanded President Biden phase out fossil fuel drilling, declare a climate emergency, and speed up the transition to clean energy.
Good. Go get them. For much more on all of these stories and the ones we couldn't get to today, check out our website at greennews.bradblog.com. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report.
These guys have been playing us for fools. They've been playing all of us for fools.
Then I'll get on my knees and pray.
Kind of saw that bumper coming, didn't you? And of course, that also harkens back to the reign of error when dim leaders said, "Hey, you know what that song says? Fool me once, shame on you. Fool me twice, won't get fooled again." I love that band, The Witch.
So this is the horn for it's still Tuesday. The 19th day of September. Oh, summer is almost gone, and it's going out beautifully here. Today was almost perfect, 69 degrees, blue skies, puffy clouds. Just lovely. Let's see, what other madness do we have that will close out these 3 hours? Lee in New York, electric car scam. What about the electric golf cart scam? Drives it right up to the edge of his own damn greens. Mr. Trump.
That's President Trump.
Do I get a free drop out of your golf cart tracks?
No, that's actually a penalty drop. Shouldn't have hit it in there.
But you made it.
You gotta play as it lies, boy. Play it as it lies. I'm the only one who gets to improve my lie.
Sorry. Hey, did you know that there may be another war cranking up in Europe? You know, over in the it's not real touristy. Yeah, Azerbaijan has decided they want to kill some Armenians. God, if it's not the Turks, it's the Azerbaijanis. No, really. Azerbaijan started shelling the Nagorno-Karabakh region today. Calling it, and apparently this is all the fad now, an anti-terrorism operation, because Azerbaijan says Nagorno-Karabakh is theirs, but Nagorno-Karabakh is, well, it's got a lot of Armenians in it. And so, according to the Defense Ministry of Azerbaijan, you can look up their, you can look up their government. It's, well, they're using high precision weapons to incapacitate Armenian backed forces. And the capital of Karabakh, which for anyone playing trivia games is Stepanakert, although
the Azerbaijanis call it Konkendi. Well, the sound of shelling could be heard in the capital today. Armenian separatist groups called it a large-scale military offensive. Meanwhile, in Baku, the capital of Azerbaijan, they said, oh no, civilians are free to leave the area via humanitarian corridors. Of course they are. They don't gotta go, they can't go home, they just gotta go somewhere else. So that there'll be less Armenians in Nagorno-Karabakh. You know, depopulation. And the funny thing is, they're both former rivals within the Soviet Union. And Azerbaijan in 2020 got land of what's described as historical significance to Armenians. Armenia, meanwhile, says, we don't have any troops there. The situation on the borders of the Republic of Armenia is relatively stable. I think the word relatively is probably doing a lot of work there. But remember, great horrors from time to time arise from seemingly insignificant flashpoints, like a malcontent deciding to waste an Austro-Hungarian archduke in Sarajevo in 1914. That worked out well, didn't it? And I presume some of those statements were coming out via Space Karen's dodgy little site. Leon Scum made a new declaration about Twitter. I guess a bunch of us will be leaving because I refuse to give that little puddle of puke a single penny. Because now everybody's going to have to pay to play at Twitter. Because see, he's got a problem. He's such an ugly little right-wing turd that no company that has any self-respect or wants people to buy things from them is willing to advertise on Shitter. So the rubes are going to have to pay. It would be great if everybody but the right-wing nuts would leave. We'll figure something out. But the ongoing enrichment of Leon Scum, derpy Batman villain, at some point, going along with it feels like both capitulation and collaboration. So as quick as that goes into effect, bye-bye my Twitter account. Not that my tweets ever go anywhere anyway. But I do like to, you know, there are people who communicate with me via Twitter and send messages to the program, and I like that. I just wanted to check and see if there was... No, nothing going on there. You remember when our most puissant Dread Sovereign Supreme Catholic Majesties struck down affirmative action, saying that it was unfair to white people? Do you recall that old Balls and Strikes, the Chief Justice, said that they would defer to the military in regard to its recruiting and officer needs for diversity because it was not presently before the bar of the court. Ha-ha! It's gonna be the same filthy little organization. Students for Fair Admissions. That was founded by a little turd named Edward Blum. Filed suit against the U.S. Military Academy, West Point, today in White Plains, New York. Claiming once again that any affirmative action policies maintained by the United States Army in the United States Military Academy are being unfair to the white people, the poor put upon white people. Students for Fair Admissions, again, based in the Old Dominion, Virginia, claimed that they had two members who were white male high school students, who of course were not identified because they probably don't exist, were ready and able to apply to West Point, but their race would prevent them because they're just poor little white boys. Prevent them from competing for admission on an equal footing. Oh, for fuck's sake. First of all, I've kind of been through this process. It was a long time ago. There are multiple routes to getting into the service academies. The primary one is to seek a nomination for an appointment from either of your senators or your member of the House of Representatives. I don't recall now if the governor can give one of those out too. But I do know that the two senators and the individual member of your from your congressional district, they have a certain number of nominations for appointment that they can give out in any given year. I received one once upon a time to the United States Naval Academy. And then from nomination, it goes to an appointment. And your appointment, okay, so these two little privileged white boy creeps, who probably don't even exist, and will never be identified in court documents, because as we found out this past term, it's okay to simply lie about things to the Supreme Court of the United States as long as you're lying about the right stuff. Remember the made-up people who wanted the computer Karen in Colorado to design them a homosexual wedding website, and it turned out they didn't even exist because somebody actually found the person named as such, and the guy said, huh? I've never sought business with this woman, and I'm also straight and married to a woman. And the Supreme Court said, no harm, no foul. Well, the bottom line is, wherever these little creeps are in Virginia, again, who probably don't exist, the admissions policies of West Point have little or nothing to do with whether they get through the primary hurdles to get them into the schools. Unless how one gets into West Point has changed dramatically from the process that had existed, let's say, in 1979 and there before for yea verily centuries. Are they saying that Tim Kaine or Mark Warner would discriminate, both of whom are white guys, or their member of Congress who is almost certainly a white guy, unless maybe it's a white woman, would discriminate on against them based on their the fact that they are poor, put upon white boys. Or that once they got the appointment that, I don't know, they'd be hazed at West Point for their whiteness. At some point, does a court step in and actually say, okay, Edward Blum, put up or shut up? Because they could damn sure identify the boys to the court, and the court, upon its own initiative, sua sponte, as we say in Latin, could get on the blower and say, hey, get these two boys, you know, sneak them in the back door of the courtroom, but I want to interview them. Sir, they're, you know, one of their fathers is a Biden whistleblower, and he's lost, and they're lost with him, okay? So what this racist is trying to get at, he wants an order ultimately from the Supreme Court of the United States that bars West Point from considering an applicant's race when making admissions decisions. Honest to God, this sounds like this fucker doesn't even have any idea how one gets in, again, unless the process has changed. And they're using the Equal Protection Clause of the 14th Amendment, this creep is, this racist, a paragraph in the Constitution designed to prevent white people from shitting all over people of color to claim that the white people are the victims. I have a feeling it's a little bit different. There's a little bit of a difference between suing West Point and suing Harvard and the University of North Carolina. And old Balls and Strikes said in a footnote that the military academies have potentially distinct interests. Putting out a statement today, however, racist Blum said, "No level of deference justifies these polarizing and disliked racial classifications and preferences in admissions to West Point of any or any of our service academies. We need our officer corps to be white and male." I added that last part. See, ultimately, they seek to disassemble everything that touches on equality or advancement for anyone who isn't white, cisgender, heterosexual, and male. This feels like so much bullshit that it will be treated as though it is serious news. And more's the pity. Because the reality is, our military needs to look like America if it's going to be anything resembling an American military. And I'm willing to bet the number of white admissions to West Point isn't exactly dwindling into nothing. But in Bloom's world, even one black face at West Point is one black face too many. So that's the program this evening. Thank you, Tom and Sunny San Rafael, from keeping this from being a goose egg. Thank you so much. I mean that sincerely. Thank you to our Patreon and PayPal subscribers. Thank you to our a la carte contributors. That's you tonight, Tom. Thanks to each and every one of you who share your precious finite time engaging in the program in whatever manner you so choose. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff. Thank you, Roger, in the chat room. Thank you to our news ninjas. Thank you, Brother Deacon Asa, headon.live. Remember, like and subscribe to the podcast if that's how you listen to it. Every time you like, every time you subscribe, every time you leave a comment, you make it a little more likely that someone else who maybe needs to find this conversation will wander in and become a new friend. Thank you, John Fox in Australia. Thank you, Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. Thanks to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the folks at Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. 20 plus years at the forefront of the struggle for human rights and environmental justice in Appalachia, and a proud union shop. Please, stay safe. Start making plans to get your booster. Wear your masks. Especially around the maggots. Wash your hands, don't touch your face, use your hand sanitizer. Maintain your social distance. And you know, if a 6'9" giant of a man walks up and says, well, maybe if I start vaping in musicals and reaching for the hog, they'll make me a folk hero. You run right up and you shake John Fetterman's hand and you tell him what a fantastic senator he is. But if he happens to be being followed by a little gooey-voiced troll talking about the decorum in the Senate, I'll avoid Joe to the mansion born like the plague. Because he is. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Love you, Wayne. Later.